two men enter, but only one can be named champion. These men have faces for radio, but do they have the chin to take a punch?
You want me to hit you?
That's right.
What, like in the face?
Surprise me.
This is so stupid.
Anyone can give a hot take. Everyone has an opinion, but can they fight?
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
It's time for the Killer Bees Fight Club. Let's get ready to... Okay, that's Michael Buffer's lawyers. I'm not going to say the line, Michael Buffer lawyers. I'm not going to say the line. You're so strong.
Before we get to the Fight Club tournament final, which is coming up today, Chandler Rum just tweeted, it's still unclear what, if anything, is wrong with Fromber. An Astros spokesman said Joe Espada will provide an update at 4:45, and general manager Dana Brown will also be available. I don't like that the GM's available.
I don't like that the phrasing of what, if anything. Like, how could something not be wrong with Fromber?
I think that's the positive. I think, to the point.
I mean, it's speculation.
The positive is what, if anything. So maybe it's nothing. Maybe it is like a stomach bug.
Yeah, but that's speculation from Channel.
I think it's worse what Jeremy said. If Dana's involved, that means that it's something.
Yeah, why would the general manager be there?
If the manager's just giving you an update, hey, look, we got back to the hotel last night. He got hungry late. You know, he ate something. That's one thing that Joe Espada can handle.
If that's it, there's no reason the GM would be out there.
Now, okay, so that's – I'm going to read into that as not good news. It's not good news. It's bad news.
Yeah.
Now, from a Fromber perspective, what could potentially be good news? Like, you had to make a roster move today for this Henley guy to make the start. Their roster move was that they DFA'd Miguel Diaz. So, like, he was on the big league roster. He pitched in one game, a scoreless inning. Like, I don't know how much they really, like – I mean, obviously they don't love Miguel Diaz. They just DFA'd him.
They just picked up, right?
Yeah, but I also feel like – don't they have that Ortega guy that they could have put on the 60-day IL? But I don't think you would have DFA'd Diaz if you were placing Fromber, like, on the 60-day IL.
Probably true.
Like, just from a roster-building point of view, you have a 40-man roster – you're not just going to get rid of a guy that you brought in and actually pitched a scoreless inning in the bigs if you could just put Fromber on the 60-day IL. So, but you're also not going to know if he has a torn UCL right now. You got to wait for imaging and things like that.
If there's any kind of swelling
and
or whatever,
it's all, 15-day IL doesn't open up the – so I don't know how much good news that actually is. That's probably not that much good news, actually.
Yeah, I just don't – if the general manager is going to be at the press conference, that means there's going to be questions to answer or a little bit more detail to where what happened. That's not good.
Yeah.
Long-term questions to answer. Because, like, as you said, if it's missed one start because he got food poisoning, there's no reason for Dana Brown to answer questions about that.
Espada handles that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. He sprained his ankle leaving the dugout, which actually happened last year, right? Or was it entering the dugout?
That's right. Yeah, right. Going down the stairs.
Yeah, so I don't love seeing that Dana Brown is going to be there. That sounds scary to me.
I'm with you guys. That is a red flag to me.
Dang.
If this was Miami, there would be an answer. This is not Miami.
Grade the joke. 713-780-3776. Brian?
I'm still not even getting the joke, so you're going to have...
Yeah, what is the... Is it the answer was Paul Pierce.
No, it's the booby trap. Because when the Rockets would go to Miami every year, they would end up either holding guys out or guys would miss the game because the booby...
Oh, they're
the booby
partying.
Trap,
okay.
Yeah. And that's
all
the
right.
One where the fight happened in the parking lot, too, with KPJ and...
If you got to explain the joke.
That's the problem. You got to explain it.
Well, because obviously forever and a day in the NBA,
2.4.
It's like.
No, we get it.
The guys are going to be out. I understand.
I'm going to go 1-7. 1-7. Grade the joke, 713-780-ESPN. Maybe we're just not cool enough to understand it.
That's definitely possible.
All right, the semifinal last week, we saw Seth Payne have to take on Lance Zierlein with a trip to the final. On the line to get into the Killer Bee Fight Club final against we have two semifinals. Booker T, Clint Sterner. Booker T rolls past the Baytown baddie 68% to 32%. So Booker T punching his ticket into the final as he beats up on Clint Sterner. And in the second one, Seth Payne gets through our morning show. He beat John Granato in the Elite Eight. He beats Lance Zierlein in the Final Four 55% to 45%. So our final is set. In the Killer Bee Fight Club tournament, it pits Seth Payne versus Booker T in the championship on Championship Monday.
Before we get into the actual fight, I think this is the final championship match we all expected, is it not?
Yeah, I think so we all predicted.
Yeah, I think we all did. Yeah,
this was. I think this was the this, you know, we're getting Purdue and UConn tonight, two number one seeds. Obviously, we'd hope that the one seed on the other side of UConn would have been the Cougs. But I think we're getting a great matchup. So at least there's that aspect of this. So, all right, who's going to argue who? I mean, WrestleMania was last night. So, Jeremy, I will go ahead and let you take the wrestler with Booker T.
Okay.
And that means Joel Blank. You will argue on behalf of Seth Payne.
Okay. I mean, look, this is an ex-defensive lineman that has actually gotten leaned out and still strong. This is a guy that has been in the trenches. He knows how to handle the ground game. He knows how to handle hand-to-hand contact. He knows what he needs to do in the ring. He's also intelligent enough to think his way through, have a game plan. He went to Cornell. He's going to do some things and think about some things and look at some tape on some things so he can get the five-time in a compromising position. And then a little known fact is that his brother works for the Rugby Association. So he's going to be able to use multiple sports with physicality to his advantage and be able to attack the five-time champion in a multitude of ways. And let's be honest, he's a little bit more fleet on his feet than Booker T at this stage in his career. And then when he gets him where he needs him to get him, he's still got enough muscle that he can take care of and finish the deal.
Five-time champion. Booker T is used to being in the squared circle. He's used to being in combat sports. Seth Payne has gotten skinny. He's gotten skinny in his post-professional career. Plus, he's removed from his post-professional career. Booker T still very much involved and entered a Rumble a couple of years ago. Booker T is the bigger man. Booker T is the faster man. Booker T is the tougher man. And Booker T is used to being a champion. And Booker T is going to claim the first ever Killer Bee Fight Club Championship.
I cannot, in good conscience, pick against an ESPN 97.5 employee, someone on our station, someone from the great sport of professional wrestling. Booker T, as Jeremy pointed out, he's the faster man, he's the bigger man, he's the man with more combat sport experience. I will go Booker T 10-9 to take home the inaugural Killer Bees Fight Club bracket.
Do you guys know that Wikipedia lists Seth Payne at 303?
Maybe
that was his playing weight.
When he played,
was his playing weight. He's not anywhere close to 303 now.
I don't think Wikipedia cares about him now that he's not playing.
No, and they list Booker T at 254. I don't think Booker T's 254 anymore.
Booker T's 254 pounds of pure muscle. Muscle weighs more than fat.
I understand that concept, but I think Seth Payne also
steel,
has enough muscle
steel.
To be at least the same.
Yeah, but he was carrying a little bit of extra weight when he was playing.
Well, you had to be as a defensive tackle.
Booker T's always been chiseled. Booker T's never had an ounce of body fat in his entire life. Still doesn't. And he plays sports every day still.
He's on the payroll for WWE, right?
Yeah, he does commentary for NXT.
There you go. All right, who's going to win? 713-780-3776. You can vote on him at Jeremy Branham as well. Who wins the first ever Killer Bee Fight Club tournament? It's up to you to decide. Rocket season officially comes to an end, at least their playoff hopes, officially eliminated after they lose in dramatic fashion yesterday to Dallas, at least a poor decision at the end. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, big game tonight. Big game to decide it all, and you can actually put some money down on it at a place that I always tell you to go to, mybookie.ag. Doesn't matter if you got a fighting interest in the game itself. It's the best place to go because they take care of their customers all the time. They're doing it yet again, but they're doing it on a variety of different ways. They're taking care of now because now if you go to their website, you can get the next level experience because you can actually do the betting while you're actually watching the streaming of the game and betting the games right there from the mybookie.ag website. It's phenomenal. And now, again, they're taking care of their customers in another way with yet another variety of their bonuses. Now, you can get a bonus all the way up to $1,000. Put $200 in, suddenly got $300 in your account, instantly ready to play, and you can go to work. More money in your account means more games you can bet on and, of course, more chances to win. It's a reputable company that's been in business for over a decade. They ain't going anywhere, neither is your money. They're going to take care of you every step of the way. And you know they got all the sports, the in-game, the live game, all of that going on. It could be anything from golf and UFC to all the different baseball action going on right now, college basketball tonight, NBA basketball with playoffs around the corner. And when there's not games going on, there's still gambling to be had because live dealers are standing by with casino games as well. That's why that they have your total one-stop shop for gambling covered. It's mybookie.ag, but the way to get those bonuses is use our promo code. Use our promo code BET975 whenever you get the chance. That's how you really, truly cash in. You get those bonuses, you get more cash in your account, and you have more opportunities to win. As I always tell you, bet anything, anytime, anywhere, with the only place I tell you to do it. It's mybookie.ag, and use our promo code BET975.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Space Cadet Bar in the Heights.
Space Cadet, your place to watch the Astros tonight against the Rangers. If you're here by the third inning and the Astros win, they're going to pick up a beer for you. Also, your place to watch the national championship tonight, Space Cadet in the Heights. Great daily specials as well. Usually not open on Mondays, but they're open today for you. All right. Rockets lost to the Mavericks on Sunday, 147-136 in overtime. Rockets missed some free throws down the stretch. Jabari missed two. Rockets didn't foul. Exum hit the three. Rockets lose in overtime, and they're officially eliminated from the playoffs, although their chances of making the playoffs were less than 1%, greater than zero. Your thoughts from that game on Sunday and the Rockets being eliminated, and then just the questions surrounding the final couple of minutes.
Yeah, look, I think the biggest takeaway to me, because I saw people saying, should Jabari be on the floor anymore when free throws need to be made? It's just too early in a guy's career to be saying he shouldn't be on the floor anymore. Yeah, he missed a free throw. Yeah, it was big. Yeah, it was costly. It's a never-ending discussion with coaches and everybody else. Do you foul there or don't you? I've always been an advocate of you foul there. But there's an art to making sure you foul, making sure where you do it is important. They're not in the gather trying to get a shot up. But you can't be beat if you do it right. If you foul, you can avoid getting beat.
You can get beat if you foul.
I mean, a four-point play.
Or you make the first free throw, you miss the second, tip back, rebound, you hit a three. It's four-point possession.
I'll live with the chances to foul and have all of that happen. To go right for them to have a chance. I've always been an advocate. Van Gundy's rule, he hated doing it. He almost refused to foul. But we used to always say, if you try to understand the logic and the thinking, because he did at least relent and say there were times you could do it, under 5 seconds to me is hyper important, where if you can foul, the chances of all that other stuff going right are even more greatly reduced. I just believe in fouling there.
Yeah, 5 seconds is tough because they're going to get a shot up. So, like, you don't want to foul him in the act.
Right.
I think the sweet spot's more like 5 to 10 seconds. I probably lean foul. I can go both ways. Like, what does Exum shoot from 3-point range? 35%?
Yeah, he's not good.
So a 35% chance that he makes the shot to send the game into overtime. It looked to me like Dylan Brooks was trying to foul. Like, he was chased off the screen. He almost dove for Luka, just couldn't quite reach him. And then Ime mentioned after the game that they are a fouling team in that situation. They just didn't do it. They didn't receive the message. So it's not that Udoka chose to not foul. They just didn't execute the foul. Udoka said he's always been in his entire life a coach who's going to foul in that spot. Now, I think this is the third time that they haven't done it this year.
Remember, the last time it was Amen was supposed to, and he didn't. And then they ended up, again, with the same thing where the shot was made, but they were using that as a learning moment for Amen. But, yeah, I mean, from his standpoint, yes, he does teach that, it seems, that he will foul.
Yeah, so he's on the same side as you, that he's going to be a coach that fouls. I could go either way. Like, people lose their minds about this. I'm okay not fouling. I'm okay if you do foul. I think it makes sense on both sides, and I think personnel comes into play. I think a lot of things come into play. I think time comes into play. Like, I know that I know a lot of Twitter was like upset at Bullock for not fouling. The other thing is, you don't want to foul whenever they're at your free throw line. You want to wait till they come across half court, so you're using some time. But the biggest crime was the fact that they missed all those free throws.
Yep.
Fred VanVleet missing one. Pulling Jabari late in the game is silly to me. Mm-hmm. He's an 80% career free throw shooter. He's one of the best free throw shooters you have on your team. He just needs to buckle down and knock down a free throw. So it was a tough way to lose. You weren't making the playoffs anyways. I think these losses are kind of good for the Rockets, and I'm not even talking lotto balls. I think it's good to have some difficult losses to learn from. You're at Dallas, one of the best teams in the NBA. They've been rolling, and you're right there in that game. You led for most of it, and you had a pretty convincing lead for a good amount of time.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of good from that game. I kind of like that they blew that, because it's like, okay, next time we're in this spot, obviously talking about next year, okay, here's what we need to do, here's what we have to buckle down. I feel like the Rockets have learned a lot of lessons this year that is going to treat them well. But if you're an Ime Udoka needs to foul in that spot, well, Ime Udoka said after the game that he is a guy who fouls in that spot. So nothing to worry about there. They just didn't execute it.
Yeah, no, look, and I think that I'm still a guy that believes, well, any chance now that you can just stack and rack any extra percentage points to try and do what they say is probably not going to get done for you, so be it. But you can learn from all of these things, and this whole season has been a learning curve. The fact is that you won way more games than you did a year ago. It's been a huge positive. They're playing basketball that's worth watching. You've seen, finally, the development of all these young players. So if they're learning along the way, and I go back to that game where Amen didn't foul, he did learn. You could see that he was nodding his head, and as guys were explaining things to him, everybody's going to learn from these moments so that when the games do matter, hopefully next season, that they don't do the same kind of things, and maybe the big games will help them be better prepared for those ones that they have to win down the stretch.
What do you think of the Amen ejection? Flagrant 2 ejection.
I don't know that I must have missed that.
I forget the guy who was it was that Keebler cookie guy. He kind of ran Keebler through a screen, and then he threw like his forearm to the, like, the bottom side of the chin, but just kind of pushed him. It really wasn't like a punch; it was like a push. And they upgraded it to a flagrant 2, and they threw him out of the game.
Yeah, I missed that.
Yeah, Ime said after the game, it's like back in the day that would have just been a normal foul. I think the NBA's gone soft. Like, for that to be a flagrant 2 and an ejection to me is wild. Silly to me. I think the NBA has gone super soft when it comes to plays like that.
Yeah, I think that they've gone over the top and trying to micromanage because they don't think basketball is supposed to be that physical of a sport. Look, I think a lot of it sometimes, too, is the fact that they're dealing with so much with the Draymonds of the world and the guys that take it too far, push it to, you know, over the limits. But there has to be some physicality in basketball. I mean, the fact that you took away a hand check and all they can do is touch with their forearm makes everything so hyper. It just changes the entire game. This is why we've seen so much fluidity in the offense and such higher scores, is because you can't really touch anybody. But when you say you can't touch anybody, then when someone does, everything is magnified like it's this massive end-of-the-world type play.
Yeah, I'm a fan of a men's physicality. Like, even though he got ejected from this game and you don't want him to get ejected, flagrant 2 upgrades, you know, all the time. I like that you have a rookie who's in his first year in the NBA that isn't scared of a little bit of combat. Like, he's not backing down. He did it earlier that year with the, how do you pronounce, Jeremy Sochan from San Antonio, the point guard from Baylor. He doesn't play point guard anymore.
Yeah.
But they got into a little bit of a, you know, I wouldn't even call that one a scrum. That was more of a, we're going to look at each other in the face and, hey, say mean things to each other.
You're fake tough.
The one on Sunday was more, he ran through the screen, physical, didn't back down. I liked it. Didn't think it should have been a flagrant 2, but I do like that from the young kid.
The thing that I like more than anything else is that he's done way more in his first year in the NBA than I ever could have expected. The fact that you see a kid that takes that kind of physicality to the rebounding and gets offensive rebounds, he's long, he has a nose for the ball, he's willing to be taught and wants to understand how to play the game the right way. But if you'd have told me in his rookie year, I'm not expecting much for a just-turned 19-year-old kid to try and get minutes significantly in this league, and when he does, do something with him. When you see the numbers he's been able to put up this entire season and all the different ways he not only affects the box score, more importantly, he affects the entire team with his play, you got to be super pumped to have this kid on your roster for the next 4 years. I mean, he's just going to get better as he gets more physically mature and gets into his 20s.
Hope he can develop a jump shot. That would be that'd be nice. But I do like what I've seen in year one. As far as the ping pong balls go for the Rockets, it looks like they can only approve one spot. They currently have the 12th worst record in the NBA. It looks like they could potentially get how do we say this whenever you're trying to jump a team with a worst record? They can get to the 11th worst because Chicago's 37-41. They're 38-40. But it might take a little bit of work, and by work I mean losing. And then you're only increasing your chances of getting a top four pick by 2.3% and then 0.5% to get the number one pick. So maybe you finish with the 11th worst. Maybe you finish with the 12th worst. Brooklyn's spot right now is 9th, which has a 20% top four, 4.5% number one. You're going to have to get lucky either way.
Yeah,
lucky either way.
It's literally going to be the lottery this year. You just hope that the ping pong balls fall your way. And you get both the picks. But nonetheless, it makes it a lot easier to swallow when you know you got Brooklyn's pick, and that should be a significant add to this team regardless.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP, listener line, 713-780-3776. It's time for our Mailbag Monday. What's your question for the Killer Bees? 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, right now, a moment for my good friends at X Golf and Katy. Look, X Golf and Katy is really picking up. It's taking on. Now, I mentioned that deal they had going on where you could rent the bays out for the entire Masters Sunday, get the same kind of food that they serve at Augusta, use the bays with the most accurate golf bays I've seen in Houston from 3 o'clock until 8 o'clock. They're sold out. So that's a good thing for them. It's kind of a bummer for you. But now it's where you really got to take advantage of being able to play at X Golf. You can go in there and practice. You can go in there and play courses, 50 courses all across the world. But the big thing now is their 2024 spring leagues are starting up. If you missed the Sunday at the Masters, don't miss the league play because the league play is awesome. The league play for singles, Monday nights, 18 holes, a gross and net score competition each and every week. Winners receive 2 custom-fit, tailor-made wedges of choice. The league runs from April 22nd to June 10th. It's a single event for single players, just not in any kind of forms with twosomes or foursomes, and it's $300 a player. That's on Monday nights. Wednesday nights, they are going to have a scramble league. It's 9 holes. It's a 2-man team. It's $300 per player, and you play every week from April 24th to June 12th. Again, gross and net score competitions. X Golf is handicapping everything, so your handicap is going to be required. Winning team members receive TaylorMade or Callaway drivers. That's amazing as well. And if you just want to go in and stop in, it's the best combination of a sports bar with the TVs, great food and drinks, with the best golf simulators I've ever been on. The putting is so fantastic. You can actually play your own golf ball that you play out with on the course by using it as part of the simulators. And every shot, you can calculate spin, distance, direction, and so much more.
Mail call!
It's a Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees.
You've got mail.
Time now for our Mailbag Monday. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Space Cadet in the Heights. Great spot to watch your Astros. If Astros win, you're here by the third inning. Get you a free beer after the game. All right, what's your question for the Killer Bees? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. 713-780-3776. Who do you think wins the championship game tonight?
I think UConn does. I just think that they're deep. They're talented. It's going to be interesting to see the battle of the two bigs. I just think when you look at the complementary pieces, the UConn guys are they got wingspans. They're rangy. They're athletic.
Everyone has a wingspan.
I get it. I think that they're a more talented team. I think they're a deeper team. I think that if I'm betting on it, I'm taking UConn. But I sure would like to see Purdue pull the upset.
You giving the 6.5 points?
Yeah, I think UConn covers the 6.5. I think that UConn wins by 10.
Yeah, I think they win by double digits too. Yeah. I'm with you, mostly because of wingspans.
I'm just saying. I mean, you know.
No, I just think they have an answer. Like, I don't think UConn has holes. How do you say their big man's name? Klingon.
Is it Klingon?
I don't know. I think he's going to stop Edie, but he gives you some size against Edie, and he's more athletic than Edie. I'm really interested to see how Hurley defends him. Like, do they send a double team? Do they just say, hey, go against – they also have that dude off the bench who's really long. He's probably like a 7-footer that's probably a 7'6 wingspan. So I think they have some pieces that can slow him down. Plus, Purdue, you pressure their guards a little bit with some really good defense, they can have trouble. So
that's what I was saying. Transition is where UConn just – they flourish. They get out in transition. They finish at the bucket. They can still pull up and hit the three. I think that Purdue is more of a get-to-your-spots, kind of hit the open shot, kind of move the basketball type team. I think if they play with pace, UConn can play so many different ways and beat you. But I just don't think Purdue has the answers.
What's your question for the Killer Bees? It's our Mailbag Monday, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. 0170, who is to blame for the crash between Danny Ricciardo and Albon at the Japanese Grand Prix?
I would think that it doesn't matter because they're all playing for second anymore, racing for second anyway. Because Verstappen just keeps on stomping everybody down.
Did Verstappen win the Japanese Grand Prix? He's so dominant.
He's either won 4 of the last 5 races or 3 of the last 4, but he just continues to just stomp everybody.
I'll usually check the results. I was busy this week and didn't have the opportunity to do that.
I honestly thought Joel was going with a bit there with the last name. You completely
no. You didn't know Verstappen?
I had no idea who any of these people are.
You don't know Verstappen?
No idea.
You don't watch Drive to Survive on Netflix?
No. Dominant.
You should watch Drive to Survive.
Yeah, I just never
I think
been,
you would enjoy it.
I've never been interested in racing. But
same.
I know, but you're right. Maybe
me
the Netflix
well.
Show, the drama, the reality show, maybe that'll get me interested in it.
The Netflix show makes me want to watch the races, and then I'll turn the race on for like 5 minutes and be like, I don't want to watch the races. The Netflix show is way better than the races, which shows me that I'm a huge – I'm not even a casual. I'm like – I'm a, what would you call a casual that doesn't even watch the sport?
I like the entertainment
of the television.
I don't think there's even a word for that.
I don't think so. I'm less than a casual when it comes to F1. I just like the Netflix.
I think I'd be the same way.
713-780-ESPN. What's your question for the Killer Bees? 713-780-3776. 6967. I want some honest thoughts on why Zach Edey needs to play the victim like he's been passed over his whole life. He's 7-4 and not very good. He probably won't be drafted. We'll form this into a question for him. What do you think about Zach Edey's chances to be a professional player in the NBA?
I think he will get drafted. I think that there are still teams that are intrigued by size with, you know, he's got some touch. He's not completely mechanical. You and I have had this conversation off the air a couple times. I don't think that, you know, most of the guys that his size, it's not Taco Fall type players. And you see guys that are going to get an opportunity for a year or two to develop in this league. And I think that with touch, situationally, he can find a way onto a roster in the NBA. He's not going to be the dominant player he was in college, but I think he has enough of a skill set with his size that he can find a way onto a roster.
Yeah, I could. I think he'll be on a roster. I've seen mock drafts that have him going in the lottery.
I saw mid to late first.
There was a process. They up on the screens here at Space Cadet. They had the ESPN rankings for the draft of these guys at the UConn-Purdue game. And Edey was 13th overall. So, I mean, I certainly think he's going to be drafted. Now, we could argue about how well he'll do once he's in the league, but he's going to make a roster.
He's a big man that has some skill offensively. Like, he's not a stiff. Like, he can score in the paint. Now, he doesn't have a great jump shot, which I think hurts him, like, is on the offensive end. And then I don't see how he can stay on the floor defensively over a significant period of time. Like, maybe specific to some matchups whenever he can guard, like, bigger centers. But you get him in some space where he has to use his quickness. Like, he doesn't have a whole lot of that. I think he would be a major defensive liability. Yeah. Now, he's got such great length, though.
I was going to say, that's why it's situational. There's going to be times where you can find a place for him on the floor. And I do think he shoots it well enough, has a good enough touch that he can make a shot or a free throw or something that you need him to do. But it's like the last big kid from Iowa that was Luka Garza won the Wooden Award or either won it or was up for it 2 years in a row. You know, he was a late second, I think, pick in the NBA. He's bounced around between Detroit and Minnesota, a few teams. He can find his way on a roster and probably have a chance to develop over a couple of years, but he's not going to be close to the kind of player he was in college or have a starting job,
yeah.
I don't think.
I think he's better than Garza. I don't remember Garza's height. What was it, like 7'1", 7'2", maybe?
Yeah.
Was he seven foot?
Yeah. So he actually had a three ball for a while. I mean,
he developed it last year.
Time, but he could shoot the three ball decently.
See, that's – I think Edey's made one career three. So,
he's
like, he doesn't space the floor at all. Like, he can knock down a free throw, yeah. But, like, can he knock down a 15-foot baseline jumper? So he's kind of limited offensively. Like, he's got to go to the post. And then what happens on the defensive end guarding the NBA speed and space? I don't know. I'm actually rooting for him in the NBA, though.
He's got to guard, like, try to guard the Embiids of the world.
Yeah, but even guys like Embiid can take you off the dribble.
Yeah, but Embiid doesn't have crazy
speed.
Quickness.
Yeah.
Yeah, he can
Joker
beat you off
would
the dribble.
Be a really hard
I mean,
guard for him.
Embiid will bring you out,
because Joker gets out in transition, handles the ball.
But he's slow. Like, Embiid, I think, is quicker and faster than Joker.
I don't know. Because you could ball handling, passing, everything that he does too. I think that he can get out, and he's we know he's doughy looking, but he's deceptively fast going up and down the floor. He beats a lot of his guys.
Yeah, but who's quicker, Embiid or Jokic?
I might think it's Joker.
I think they're about even. Like, I think they're both a little lumbering. Like, they're fluid. They're not falling over themselves. They have good control of their body. I don't think either one's, like, shifty or quick.
Speaking of that, did you see some dumbass on Twitter today that said that watching Embiid, who, like, had a guy in space and dribbled it through his legs a few times around,
yeah.
said that he's way better than Hakeem? Or Hakeem doesn't have the moves of Embiid. It's like, what the hell are you not missing here?
I think the quote was, I've never seen a center do this. Hakeem couldn't pull off the moves that Embiid did. And literally, of course, within 2 seconds, you can find a video of Hakeem doing exactly that and more.
Yeah. I mean,
with any research limit, that person could have found that.
That's that tell me you've never seen a Keem play without telling me you've never seen a Keem play.
Yeah, it's just recent.
Or
bias.
On the flip side, I looked at the dude's bio, and he's a big Sixers honk. So, of course, you're going to blow up Joel Embiid, but easy how far you go.
Like, I mean, Embiid's really good.
He is.
Like, he's got some offensive skill, and he's got some, like, guard-like
okay.
skill.
Sorry, guys, not to bust in, but there is a photo from Chandler Rome. Jim Crane is here. Not here at the end of
the he's doing the press
yet,
conference?
But he apparently greeted tonight's starter, Blair Hindley. Does that make you more nervous?
Hold on, what did you say?
Crane's in the building. Crane,
he's doing what with Hindley?
So he's greeting Blair Hindley, but it looks like he is at the ballpark. Like he might. I don't know if he's a part of this presser today or not, but this.
I doubt it.
He's probably there because it's always.
I wanted to see the owners.
You know, like Tillman travels.
That's true.
Tillman travels with the team a lot. Les used to travel with the team a lot. I'm sure owners, especially on the quick jaunts, will go to Dallas. I was thinking maybe because they needed him in a pinch that they used Crane's plane to take him to get to the game tonight.
Rangers fans are spreading rumors that it's PEDs, but. I don't think that would be true because Major League Baseball announces that.
Yeah,
and
they
would
also,
have a reaction.
They might
want to
check a guy that plays the outfield for their team first. Slow down.
The fact that he's there, the fact that Dana, the Crane being there doesn't really change my opinion at all.
Dana being involved is scary.
Dana being part of the press conference is something that concerns me, but Crane being there is not concerning to me at all. I bet you Crane makes a decent amount of road trips that we never even know about. And he's not. He doesn't like talking to the media. He probably wants to avoid that.
In every sport, there's the owner's tickets.
Yeah.
So the owner has the right to and has tickets to every game on the road if they want them.
The ESPN Houston, the YouTube, Rocky, says Rockets need a legit center. What about ED with Houston?
Yeah, I thought about him as a backup, backup. But I think Jock Landale might be more athletic. I think ED has better touch. I think Jock Landale is very much more athletic than Zach Edey is. I think Edey's a guy that has to. He's really kind of better suited for like a half court type offensive team. I don't think the way the Rockets want to play it fits his style at all.
Yeah, I think Edey would be the fifth best center on the Rockets. He would be behind Alpi. I think he'd be behind Jabari. I think he would be behind Steven Adams. And I think he'd be behind Jock Landale. Edey would be their fifth best center.
Jeff Green.
I'm not gonna go Green. I don't think Green's a center. I know he plays there.
Well, he does play there.
But no, I'm not gonna give him Jeff Green. Maybe.
I'm giving him Jeff
Like,
Green.
If I had to give 15 minutes to one guy to play center, who do I have better results with, Jeff Green or Zach Edey? You're probably right.
Yeah, I'm giving him to Jeff.
So, sixth best center on the Rockets.
I'd rather play him in at the center.
Seventh best center on the Rockets. Who else we got?
What team does he fit with? Who plays more of that half-court style anymore?
See, I don't even think it's, like, their offensive fit. Well, I mean, it is. But I also think it's, like you said, matchup-based, depending on who the other opponent's center is.
I mean, even the teams that play the true center, a lot of them, you know, like Cat and Embiid, there's still guys that can face up, spread the floor, take you off the dribble, and he's going to have a problem with all those guys.
I could see him going up against a Rudy Gobert because Gobert's not going to face the basket a lot or shoot the three. And he's not real good, like, in space.
And he's not an offensive force.
But, yeah, all you got to do is run pick and roll and rub him off onto somebody else, and he's in trouble. Carl Anthony Towns would eat his lunch.
But even then, like, talk about defending a pick and roll. Like, you're going to – like, what's Edey going to do on a pick and roll, and then you have a guy like Rudy Gobert that's going to the dunk spot or going for the lob above him. So, like, he's either got to commit to the ball handler or guard – or he's got to drop back and have Gobert towering above him on a lob.
And what do you tell him in the offseason between now and his first year in the NBA that he has to work on to get better? I would say that the easiest thing is to say you got to be a better shooter facing the basket, but you can't teach what he doesn't have. He doesn't have foot speed, and he doesn't have the lateral quickness to stay with guys on the perimeter.
Yeah, the UConn center is a way better NBA prospect.
Oh, yeah, he's
Klingon. Whatever, however you pronounce his name. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Space Cadet in the Heights. Your spot to watch the game tonight. Also your spot to watch the Astros. If you're here by the third inning and they win, well, they're going to buy you a beer. We'll see if the Fromber news breaks while we're away. If not, what do Diggs and the Texans need to accomplish this season for a second-round pick to be worth just one potential season? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word for Vanderford Air. Vanderford is the best in the business being here local in Houston at taking care of Houstonians. It starts with all the different ways that they can take care of you. If you got a plumbing issue, if you got an air conditioning or HVAC issue, or if you just want to make sure that your systems are up to speed and your pipes and everything are good to go before you get into the dog days of summer, Vanderford Air is who you need to call and who you need to get with as soon as possible. The main thing is, when we start talking about Houston, we talk about the heat. When you get to triple digits, it's the worst time in the world for your AC unit or your HVAC to go down. But the best thing to know is if you already got their number, Vanderford Air, when you call them within 24 hours, will be at your door. It's not going to take 2 to 3 days or a week because the company is overloaded or can't get to you. They are going to make sure they are there quickly when you need them most, and we know that's when your units go down in the middle of the dog days of summer. But they take care of you across the board. You want to repipe the house? You want to work on getting some humidifier action into your house? They can take care of that too. And everything they do is 100% satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. It goes across the board. Performance guarantee. Everything operates at factory standards, whether it's a part or it's actually a replacement, whether the quality of the workmanship is always going to be guaranteed. And if you don't think so, and they make everything work well, then you can also get that 100% satisfaction guaranteed and your money back. Best value at the lowest cost to you. There's no place I'd rather send you. I'm sending you to VanderfordAir.com and call them. 281-557-COOL. Easy to remember. Put it in your phone. 281-557-COOL. Go see Vanderford Air and get that air conditioning unit tuned up today.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Space Cadet Bar in the Heights.
Yes, sir. Space Cadet in the Heights. He's Blank. I'm Branham. Trying these wings. These wings are fantastic. Smoked and fried. Very, very good. A cold beer as well. It's your spot to come have a bite, come have a drink, watch the Astros. You're here by the third inning. They win. We will buy you a beer after the game. Might be a little bit more difficult today with Blair Henley on the mound, not Framber Valdez. We're monitoring the situation in Arlington, see why Framber isn't starting. Joe Espada is expected to meet with the media in the next couple of minutes. Also, general manager Dana Brown will also be available, according to Chandler Rome. So we'll watch to see what's going on, but get out here to Space Cadet, watch your Astros, watch your college basketball each and every day. Today, they're not usually open on Mondays, but they opened up for us because they're very nice. But they're honoring their 50-cent wing specials. Every Wednesday, 50-cent wings, $2.50 imported bottles, $4 16-ounce drafts on Wednesdays. Thursdays, their steak night, $25 steak, can't beat that. $5 old-fashions as well with Makers. Friday, $2 tacos, $5 bottomless chips and salsa, $12 Michelada flights on Saturday from 10 to 3, and then Sunday all-day brunch, a Bloody Mary got bar. It. You got news, Brian?
Yeah, Brian McTaggart's got it.
Yeah, so from Chandler Rowe, I'm sure McTaggart has it as well. Framber Valdez felt soreness in the top of his left elbow after playing catch, and he is in Houston seeing team doctors, according to Joe Espada.
Okay, so left elbow discomfort.
Yep.
I'm always scared whenever a pitcher is reporting elbow tightness. Because it usually leads to more.
Mm-hmm. Is this Garrett Kolisch? But Garrett Kolisch now finally starting to start throwing again. This would seem to me like it's not just missing the start tonight, that it's probably going to be they're going to shut him down for a while and hope for the best and hope that this can take care of itself without having to do anything drastic. But, yeah, this is not good, I don't think.
No. I mean, there's no way you can look at elbow issue and be good news. Yeah. I mean, now the question becomes, can the Astros survive without Framber Valdez? Like, who knows how long he's going to be out? Maybe this isn't a torn UCL. Maybe he's being super precautionary. Even then, you're probably looking at an Urquidy type of situation. Because mm-hmm. Urquidy reported soreness in his elbow, right?
This
after
time,
spring
right?
Training.
After, yeah, because the first two were shoulders.
Yeah.
Yeah, now it's elbow.
The most recent one was elbow, and then he flew home. They saw no structural damage. But then even he was gone for, what, 6 to 8 weeks? Before he could even throw, he was out like 2 to 3 weeks.
Yep.
So you're looking at minimum, I would guess, minimum 6 weeks without Framber Valdez. Like, that's the range right now. They go get the MRI. There's nothing torn with the UCL. It's just soreness. They let that die down, starts playing catch again. I would say best-case scenario for Framber Valdez is a return in 6 weeks.
Yeah, because
any better than that?
No.
Best-case scenario.
They shut down Cole the last week of spring training, right? Or was it a week and a half before spring training was over and already announced he wasn't going to start the opener? And he's scheduled to start throwing, I think, later this week. So that's just start throwing. Now, to get him ramped up, depending on if you go Lance McCullers' calendar or, you know, how long it takes you to get fully ready to be able to throw, you know, start in the major leagues again and get stretched out, I would say, yeah, a minimum of 6 weeks. I think you're looking at probably longer than that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about best case scenario. Yeah, everything's completely fine, and it's just you're erring on the side of caution. You're trying to beat it before it ever becomes an issue. Absolute best case scenario is minimum 6 weeks in my mind, just experiencing elbow issues with pitchers. Worst case scenario, it's Tommy John.
Yeah.
I mean, that's quite frankly, that's what it is. Worst case scenario, they find that he has a torn UCL and it's Tommy John. Lance McCullers was like the bone spur in the forearm, and he had forearm tendon surgery. That's like a 12 to 15 month injury. So season ending is worst case. Best case scenario, you're without Framber Valdez for 6 weeks. So now the question is, now what? Whether it's the better part of that range, 6 weeks, whether it's the worst part of that range, 12 months, now what? For the Houston Astros.
Yeah, I mean, you're buying time to get JV back, and there's a ton of people losing their mind about the results that he got. The good thing was he didn't have any problems yesterday in Sugarland, and you know, he said he felt good. So you hope that he makes one more start in Sugarland and then he's ready to go, which means you're going to probably see Spencer Arrighetti or spot start until you get to that point. But then you got Verlander, and you start looking at it going, okay, Hunter Brown's probably going to stay in the rotation. You've got Javier. I don't know when Urquidy is expected to possibly be back, but you're looking at Blanco, Brown, Javier, Verlander, and
it wouldn't stun me to see Arrighetti.
Maybe.
Because I think Blair Henley is an emergency starter.
Yeah,
he's back to Sugarland tomorrow and probably never pitches in the big leagues again, quite frankly. Just looking at his numbers and the fact that we've never heard of him before is like
best
nowhere
scenario,
near
they
any
hope
of the top
he gets
prospects
through the lineup
list.
Once.
Yeah, I mean, you probably want him to eat some innings.
If possible, but I would think that if they're, you know, if they're in a good tight ball game, I don't think they're going to probably see him go further than one time through the lineup.
You get an emergency starter though; it's kind of one of those we're throwing in the white towel before. I mean, you're going to try to win the game,
mm-hmm.
but you have to have him eat innings just to save the bullpen. Like he's going to have to pitch it a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, but again, the bullpen wasn't too taxed last night. They were in a pretty decent. But I just look at it and say, if they didn't get off to the bad start that they got off to, you're right. You probably just suck this one up and say, just go out there and give us whatever you got.
I still think you do that.
I would just lean that if they're in the ball game after three innings, I think they're already getting guys warm. They're going to get a guy warmed up, and they're going to look to hopefully get someone with major league experience to try and split the series, win the game.
I mean, game 11 of the year.
I get it.
You're not. This isn't game 7 of the World Series. Like this is Blair Henley. This is going to be your only cup of coffee in major league in your professional career. Go out, throw 75 pitches. Go as deep as you can with 75 pitches, and we'll figure out the rest. Plus, the Astros don't have an off day until the 18th.
Yeah.
So, like, you're going to need some sort of coverage. Now, the coverage might only be three innings. It might only be, like, two and a third. But I think you're trying to get him as far as you can. Verlander comes back. He's going to make another start, I guess, in the minors this week. And then probably makes the turn in the rotation,
next week
and a half away, next week, something like that. So he could take the Framber spot. And there's your five-man rotation. Now, if you eventually go to the six-man rotation, then I think Arrighetti is the guy that you bring up because he's been pitching pretty good in Sugarland. He's better prospect than Henley. The reason you're not going with Arrighetti today is because he pitched whenever we were out there
Friday.
The other day. So he's not rested. He wouldn't be available. If he was rested, he would be the one making the start. If Dubin was rested, he'd probably be or if he was healthy, he'd be the one that was making the start. They have no other choice but Henley here. The Urquidy, like, he's going to be in the mix at some point here coming up. He started to throw a little bit, but then you're not looking at starting pitching help again until Luis Garcia, until Lance McCullers in the summer. This is why, like, all the talk of, you know, you can never have enough starting pitching. Like, people are talking, well, you don't need more pitching because you have these starters coming back. You can never account for your pitching staff to go a full season healthy.
Right.
You look at your 13 guys that you start the season with, you can probably, I don't know what the average is, but I bet you three of those guys are going to get hurt at some point, at minimum. So you have to account for that going into a season. That's why I was critical of the middle relief, where it's like, hey, you know, this middle relief is not great. Other people would push back, well, you got starters coming back. They can just take those spots. Yeah, they can if everybody stays healthy. The likelihood of everybody staying healthy in a pitching staff is a miracle. It doesn't happen. We talk about the pandemic of these pitchers' elbows getting blown up each and every, you know, year, and the number keeps going up and up and up. You have to account for that. You have to account for injury. You can't plan for your pitching staff to be healthy the entire year. Now, who gets hurt stinks. You don't want Framber to get hurt, Verlander. You don't want your best pitchers to get hurt. But if you think that whoever starts the season with you, your 13-man pitching staff, that they're going to be injury-free for the entire year, you're living in a dream world. You're living in a place that does not exist.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I was going to ask you if Belak would have been an option.
They used him the other night for a lot of pitches.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Whenever
yeah.
he was eating up the innings.
Because, yeah, when you said it,
because he
really
would have been.
Yeah, they'd have. That was another option, at least in a spot start, that guy that's done it before that could have possibly filled in. But, yeah, I mean, look, injuries are going to happen. We've seen it happen even with this ball club in the last year or two. Everybody's dealing with it. They're in a luxury spot if all guys are healthy. And even when they're not, that you had a surplus of starting pitching. Now you obviously don't because you didn't anticipate this one. Verlander was a setback. Thank God it wasn't as big of a deal, and hopefully he's going to be back and then he'll stay there. But you're waiting for guys to come back, and while you're biding your time, you can't afford to have multiples. And now that you are, you might have to get creative. Dana Brown might have to start doing some things that at the start of the year he didn't want to and didn't think he was going to have to do, and that's talking to other teams, finding out other guys that are out there, seeing what you got to do. Every team in this league, we talked about it. The Braves are going through it right now, and they've got issues with their starting pitching. Obviously, the Indians have problems with their starting pitching. I'm sorry, the Guardians. You're right, the Guards. All these different teams are experiencing what every team in Major League Baseball goes through every single season, from the wear and tear to just fluke accidents and other things that happen. Pitchers are going to get hurt more than ever, and you've got to be prepared.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. What does the Fromber news mean to the Astros? 713-780-3776, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN.